Welcome to Indiana Sports Beat Radio.
So for the thousands in attendance and the millions watching around the world.
Simple, I win. Google me.
You know that I'm the cream of the crop.
Oh, now, here's Jim Coyle.
Warm up, everybody. How are you? Appreciate you being with us. Indiana Sports Beat Radio coming at you on this Thursday. Glad to have you along. Glad to be here. Glad to be here as opposed to outside where it's in the 20s or down in the 30s, snow still on the ground. That's okay. It's warm inside. I hope it's warm where you are as well. Appreciate you being with us. Plenty to get to on the program. Coach Griffin joined us. Dustin Studio joined us. Matt Taylor. I think we have Clayton Anderson joining us today. We'll be doing the post-game show from Clayton Anderson's bar, country bar in Indianapolis. This weekend, as a matter of fact, Saturday, after the basketball game, which hopefully they have a little bit better performance than they did last night. We'll talk about that as Indiana goes up to Minneapolis and could not hit the broadside of a barn. Pun totally intended. They stunk it up. Man, I know that with it was like, 9 minutes to go at the free throw line. Indiana was 50%. I mean, that's awful. That's awful for any team. Much less a team that has and can and does shoot as well as these guys do. So, and to end the night the way they should have, Indiana hits one of their last seven attempts, zero of their last five field goal attempts last night. 73-64, the final. Minnesota, that's their coach's first Big Ten win, I think. His first Big Ten game. Coach Darren DeVries' first Big Ten game. Not a great start for the Hoosiers. I mean, they ended up getting the free throw percentage up to 60%. That's awful. You left 12 of 20. Eight free throws you left at the line, which you're not going to be perfect every time, but no reason this team shouldn't be close to hitting a lot better than that. But they lose by nine. Now you can nitpick all around. I'll tell you what I was shocked by. Indiana only turned the ball over seven times last night. And they force Minnesota into 16 turnovers. But they get 22 points off of those 16 turnovers. That's massive. That's a big number. But they got crushed on the boards. 40 to 25. That's 15 rebounds. That's 15 opportunities that you didn't get. Now, second chance points, 14 to 7, Minnesota. So there's another loss of 7 points. But, and this rebounding thing, it's not about having a 7-footer. It's about want to. It's about focus on rebounding. This team is not focused on rebounding the ball. That I assure you. There are too many guys that have been good rebounders that are great rebounders that were great rebounders, not because they were 7 foot. Want to. Drills, work after it, go after it. I'm not complaining. There's plenty of things I'm sure that they have to work on. But the rebounding, it's glaring. It's glaring. And it's going to kill them. It's going to hurt as they go out through the year. Now, they're heading into the game this weekend. One good thing is Louisville, they took it on the chin last night as well as they were taking on Arkansas, the Razorbacks. What was that? What was that final score? Trying to pull that up right now. Still don't have that, but there we go. But Louisville coming in to this matchup with a loss. So I don't know. Does it matter? Arkansas, Calipari, 89-80 over the Cardinals. I'm sure that Calipari enjoyed that. Iowa State put up 132 points last night on Alcorn State. 132-68. That's a lot of points, man. Holy smokes. 17th ranked Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt, BYU. Teams that are somebodies now. Coaching carousel, it's rolling on. Coach Cignetti, coach of the year, back to back. Man. See, Coach Griff going to join us today. I'll make sure I said that right. Dustin Schutte, Matt Taylor. Make sure I have the day right. I was thinking a different day in my head. How's everybody else doing? Are you staying warm? Everybody ready for a huge day in Indianapolis on Saturday? I mean, just an incredible. It doesn't even matter if you're an IU fan, a Louisville fan, an Ohio State fan, an O1 fan. It's going to be a gigantic day in Indy. Naptown is going to be rocking. If it was just the Big Ten championship, it would be huge. But you add these two basketball behemoths to it as well, and so a great day. It's a great day. Indiana got all of its guys signed yesterday on National Signing Day. As nothing out of the ordinary happened. Nothing didn't happen that was supposed to happen, at least for Indiana. Some teams did get a little surprise. You know, guys not really ready to fully commit, maybe. We'll talk more about that when Coach Griff joins us. On what Indiana got, what they brought, what they need. Taven Jackson back in the portal, by the way. I saw that yesterday as well. But we've got plenty of action coming to you. Glad to have you along. We're back with more Indiana Sports Beat Radio right after these messages, of course. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this Thursday. It is chilly out there. It's snow on the ground, but that's okay. We've got plenty of things to do. Coach Grip joins us now, fresh off of yesterday's College National Football Signing Day. Everybody everywhere sending in papers all over the place. Do they still use fax machines for these things, man?
I don't know, because now you can just scan it to your phone and attach it to an email. So I doubt if they do anymore. That was the day. Now you're standing around the fax machine waiting for that. Yeah, waiting for all those to come in. And there was always
coming through there.
Yeah, and there's always one or two that just want to drag it out. But it sounded like to me all the signees Indiana had yesterday, they were all in by probably 9:30 at the latest, maybe. I mean, those kids turned it around pretty quick. They got it done and sent in. And, 22 solid kids and some four stars in the group. And I think as overall, it's a very defensive class and a lot of really good defensive players for Indiana.
Yeah, and everyone thinks of the transfer portal today with good reason, but most programs still big in recruiting. You still have to have a recruiting base. And Indiana is trying to develop that as well. That's something that Kurt Cignetti has hung his hat on, being able to identify and develop talent. And that's something that they like to continue to do. Look what they're going to be able to do with Alberto Mendoza.
Yes, I mean, I think the biggest thing, in Coach Cignetti has referenced this, I believe, every recruiting year. He's talked about this. He's talked about the foundation, not having to totally rely on the portal to have to bring in 5, 6, 7 different, you know, elements into the team. They've had great success doing that, and I believe it's because they, as a staff, have followed kids' career that they had once contacted with at James Madison. Stephen Daly is an example number one. They had him on campus for a recruiting day at JMU, and they knew what that kid's talent was. And so there was that relationship. But I think what he wants to be able to do with the portal is fit pieces rather than trying to bring in big pieces, you know, every single year. And now you just got one, you know, you only got one portal opportunity, and a lot of good success for Indiana came in that spring one, if you really think about it.
You know, speaking of we had the awards day come out, lots of All Big Ten players, of course, Coach Cignetti, back-to-back Coach of the Year. That's a big deal. Go back and look and see how many times that's happened in the annals of the Big Ten. Stephen Daly got screwed. One of the best defensive down linemen in the Big Ten. He leads the nation and the Big Ten in tackles for loss, and he's only an honorable mention. Get out of here.
Yeah, and I think probably some of that became the fact that early on in the year, he may not have been in that top three or four guys that were trotting out on the field, so...
But Indiana's a victim of having too much success, and you're not going to get too many guys that are going to get all these awards from Indiana.
Well, yeah, again, we talked about the brand, and I'm sure the brand in the Big Ten is still Ohio State, Michigan, and those type of people. But again, there was a lot of good defenses in the Big Ten this year. I mean, when you really sit down and look at it, Iowa had a good defense. Oregon had a good defense. I mean, you could go right down the list, you know, Penn State's defense in that respect. And the problem with those teams, they just didn't have a good enough offense. Excuse me, as my puppy is having a fit because there's somebody upstairs that she wants to get to. But it's one of those things where Sig getting coached in a year back to the back. I mean, that rarely happens.
Yeah, absolutely. does it, and it really happens even less at a place like Indiana. And think about it. Indiana's had the coach of the year three times now in the last 8 years. When did Tom Allen win it?
It would have been probably that COVID era.
That's crazy, isn't it, though? I mean,
yeah.
So 5 years, three times in 5 years.
Right.
Think about that.
So again, it's a recognition that how hard it is to do what Cignetti has done at Indiana. I mean, normally you would see, okay, that's Ohio State. That's Ryan Day's award. They go 12-0. They beat Michigan. He's coach of the year, right? No. I mean, I think enough people recognize that that's what Ohio State should do year in, year out, because they've got the best. Where Sig, they're looking at it and saying, that's unbelievable, the job that those coaches have done getting Indiana to the forefront of the Big Ten, and it's not some type of one-hit wonder.
Absolutely, and man, it comes down this Saturday as the Big Ten Championship, number one, number two, Ohio State, Indiana. There's so much talk about this game, and Indiana's not supposed to win the game. Let's be honest. Ohio State, they're the reigning national champion, number one, undefeated as well. But I can't wait, man. This is going to be, I think this is going to be a fun, exciting game. These two defenses, don't come expecting a bunch of points, people.
No. Both these defense are either 1-2, 2-1 in about every statistical category, and the offenses are too. I mean, that's the dynamic that Saturday night will have. For Indiana, getting to this point, getting to the Big Ten Championship, I mean, it's going to be a great big stage for Indiana. But you could look at Ohio State, they haven't been there since, 2020? Is their last time that they actually got to the Big Ten championship? So they're
ironically, Indiana fans will tell you that's the year that Indiana should have been playing at the Big Ten championship.
Yeah, right. And so there's a lot of sub stories in it all. And, you know, you got two great defenses. This is a game, you know, it's interesting. The line started at 6.5. Okay. When first time they put a line out, which would have been last Saturday or somewhere. And it started at 6.5. It's down to 4.5.
Yeah.
Already.
It's been there for a couple of days. Well, it's been at that for a couple of days now.
Yeah. Right. But for it to drop 2 points in a matter less than a week.
It found its level. I think it found its level.
Correct. I mean, but usually if you would think that if Ohio State, that line wouldn't have moved like it would have if there was a lot of people that thought this wasn't going to be a close ball game. You know, it would have stayed there at 6.5, 6, and way we would go. But this is a game where razor thin chances come, and you either make them or you don't. And that's the big thing in this game. The mistakes that you may have gotten away with a week ago, 2 weeks ago, whatever, those mistakes cannot be made in this game because you'll get burnt, right? I mean, they'll exploit it, and the next thing you know, it's a big-time touchdown, pass or run, however you want to look at it. But Indiana, I'm interested to see how they're going to attack this Ohio State defense. I think that, you know, it's going to be interesting in Indiana's run game whether or not they can – muster anything, because that's going to be a key component.
And well, if they can't, then that game's over.
Well, that's my point, is that they're going to have to find ways to keep Julian Sand and the Ohio State offense on the sideline as much as possible. At the same time, create field position, move the ball, score points offensively. And then this is a game where special teams will ultimately come into play potentially. And when you get two evenly teams matched, special teams finds its way into the picture, you know, in that arena, and it'll be a huge point of emphasis all week when it comes to special teams as well.
Yeah, well, and it's going to be interesting to see which one of these defenses actually turns out to be the one that can stop the other, and which quarterback steps up. You know, who has the Heisman moment? Because all the stuff that's happened before now, I'm not really sure how much it matters at this point. I think all things are kind of equal right now. Fernando has – he still has the throw and the catch in his back pocket, but I'm not sure if that'll buy you a cup of coffee.
Well, he didn't play very good against Purdue. I mean, you know, he didn't play very good against Purdue, and he hasn't really played great. You know, he's been, you know, not as well as he has been. So this would be a great game to see inside now. That's a huge component. And like you said, I think a lot of people are holding their votes to see what all happens Saturday. And it's going to be think of this. Saiyan's, in reality, is a true freshman when you think about it, because he hasn't played hardly any, you know, he hasn't played in these games. And he just amazes me how well he throws the football to Tate and Smith. And that's going to be a huge, huge deal Saturday. Can Indiana get the pressure on Saiyan to force him into making mistakes and get him off balanced? So that will be the key component there on a defense. Ohio State really hasn't ran the ball great. I mean, not to say that they've, you know, needed to in some games. They did a little better against Michigan. And they're pretty simple in the run game, too. I mean, they're not a big flashy team. And it's an interesting way they've approached this year in terms of not, exploding for 60 points or 50 points or things of that matter. It's really been those games where they've just kind of milked the clock and took their time doing it. And that's going to be an interesting dynamic as well.
Absolutely. Bill pointing out that last year when Indiana and Ohio State played, that the special teams gave up 14 points. And that's something that you cannot have happen.
No, that was the ball game. I mean, when you think of that, was the ball game, because remember, that game was 7-7 at the time when they had all those debacles, and it was right before half. And, you know, we've talked about Indiana's success in the final 2 minutes of a half. In that ball game, they gave up points before half, and it was ultimately the cut that cut the deepest in that game. And that's what I believe, is that when you get two teams that are evenly matched, it always somehow, some way, special teams sneaks in there to be a big part of the game.
Yeah, and you wonder who else is going to be the guy that steps up. Is it going to be a receiver? Is it going to be a running back? Is it going to be a defender? Is it going to be multiple guys? There are so many different players from both teams that can step up and, man, just be somebody in this game, whether we're talking about Jeremiah Smith or Arvell Reese or you know, Kalon Black or Omar Cooper Jr. or Elijah Surratt, who we haven't heard a lot about. Mm-hmm. What's Indiana's offensive line going to look like? Drew Evans, will he be back completely healthy? All of that good stuff.
Yeah, they're, I think, kind of like you, I think Drew Evans would have played against Purdue if you know what hit the fan. But because they didn't need him in that respect, and they had the depth not to need him, let's put it that way, in that ball game, I do think he's back. They may give him, you know, they may limit his, you know, pitch count, kind of like they did with Surratt on Saturday. And, but I do think he's back in the swing of things, and that will be a big boost. That will be a big boost for that front up front. I like the fact that him being Black or continuing to do what they do, making things happen, irregardless of whether it's 3 yards or 83 yards. Those two guys have been warriors, And I think Indiana's got to put the Martin kid out there at some point in time too, because what he brings into the table, because he's like a combination of both of them. He's got strength and force, but he's also got speed. So it'll be a dynamic to see the chess pieces on Saturday at Lucas Oil with everything. And it's one of those games. It's you go back and forth in terms when you look at Ohio State and how good they are. And I wonder if you get the same opinion from the other side of the coin, looking at Indiana on how good Indiana really is in this respect. And these two quarterbacks, I mean, it's like you said, Jim, I think it's going to be I'm very hopeful for the fact that this could be a back and forth game where each team will have equal ability to make big plays. And it's who makes the least amount of mistakes and wins special teams that ultimately I think will have the opportunity to win. And of course, as you know, turnover margin will have a big factor in it.
Yeah, Indiana. How about Ohio State? The running back, they're led by a true freshman.
Yeah.
Dude's got close to 1,000 yards, man.
And they don't run it that much. Like they, they haven't been the cloud of dust that they've normally been.
Well, they do what they have to do.
Yep.
And they do it very well. And they're very efficient at what they do. That's another thing. Indiana's going to have to take advantage of every opportunity they get. Scoring opportunities are going to be at a premium for both teams with defenses like this. I mean, I talked about this. These defenses are both, you might as well throw them in a bucket and shake them up, man. They both lead number one, number two, in whatever points per game, defensive points scored, offensive points. This should be, hopefully, on paper, an incredible game. And if it stays the way it is, Indiana ends up being a number two seed, which that'll take care of itself.
Yeah, so, I think at this point, when you look at the four teams that are going to get a bye, whether Indiana is 2, 1, 3, or 4, I mean, it's kind of an irrelevant discussion in that matter. You know what I mean? As far as where you fall in that equation. You know, I mean, you're going to, at this point in time, every game you play is going to have a razor thin margin. You're going to play every good team that is potentially out there and then some, and you're going to have to play really good football to advance. And this is kind of like that test for Indiana too, to see where they're at when it comes to going into the college playoffs on what are some things that they think are good that may not be as good as they think they are. And that's the other thing that they'll learn against this Ohio State team. But Ohio State's offensive line, I think they're starting 4 new offensive linemen this year. That was one big part of their reasoning as far as, you know, not having a big run game early on. They wanted efficiency, so they just limited it. But now it's interesting because Hartline is now the head coach at UCF.
Yeah. He just got that. Well, but he's going to coach.
I know that, but it's an extra dynamic into their equation there.
Oh, trust me.
You know, for what he's, you know, what he's trying to accomplish. And then on top of it, trying to put a staff together, try to get people in place for recruiting and everything that goes with it. But it'll be interesting to see the carousel too, as it still is churning along, especially with Penn State. Penn State is holding the bag and they're looking so bad at doing it. It's crazy. Boy.
It's bad. We'll go ahead and take a break. Yeah. We'll get Dustin Schutte in and we'll talk about the coaching carousel. Maybe somebody will throw my name out there. I want to get hired and fired as a coach.
I'll come back.
College coach. Man.
I'll come out of retirement.
I don't do crap. I just hire me, baby. Hire me, fire me. Same day. Sign and drive. Whatever you call that deal. Hey, we got lots more coming up. We got Dustin Schutte joining us on the other side. Right after these messages. Coming down the tracks. Here he comes. Little Dustin Schutte. No, I'm just kidding. I just, that train whistle. When I was up in West Lafayette last week for the football game, the train was right when we were leaving to go off the field. is, man, it's doggy day. I'm telling you.
That's not mine. That's not mine. I took care of mine.
Yeah, the train was sitting right there at the corner of the field. And boy, did I want to jump in that thing and get someone to take a picture so badly, but not badly enough that I would have been chased all over the field by security. But how's Dustin Shooty doing?
Doing well. It's a little bit better now that I can focus strictly on basketball and that the
football
season has mercifully come to an end. Although signing day just happened, so there's a, I mean, at least somewhat of a positive outlook moving forward.
From Ole Miss, the Heritage Hills kid.
Yeah, Jack Goldsberry. Yeah, he's the son of John Goldsberry, who was a Purdue. I think he was a linebacker for a period of time, but primarily was there as a fullback. So yeah, that was probably the biggest news of the day. And then they got another kid, Josiah Hope, who they flipped from Louisville. He had kind of gone back and forth between those two schools throughout his recruitment. So those were the two big surprises, I guess you could say, on National Signing Day. There wasn't really anything else that popped up. It was kind of a ho-hum kind of day for Purdue. Like, everybody that they thought they were going to sign, they signed. There weren't any flips away from them. Those were the two that surprised. So I think it was an overall good day for Purdue on that front.
For the season they had, I'm telling you, it's not bad at all. And at least they're not looking for a coach in this coaching cycle, because this is not the cycle that you want to be looking, I don't think. And speaking of which, how bad is Penn State looking right now? How stupid are they looking?
Yeah, I mean, that's a rough situation.
And I hate to say that, because Pat Kraft, their AD, man, he makes great decisions. A former IU football player, he's done a tremendous job there. But
Yeah, it's crazy. Now, I don't know that I disagreed with them. Let's see. In general, I don't know that I would have fired James Franklin, but at the time, the way the fans were kind of treating him and the way that it was kind of really getting messy, I understood why they parted ways with him mid-season. But you would have thought that would allow them to get a head start on a coaching search. And clearly, I don't know if all of their guys got gobbled up. I don't know if the pitch wasn't good enough. I don't know what the situation was. But at this point, do you just take the interim tag off of Terry Smith, have him sign a favorable 3-year contract for you, and then, you know, if it doesn't work out after 1 year, maybe you can part ways at a relatively cheap buyout and try again next year.
These days, though, what's favorable? What's a favorable 3-year deal now? And I know what you're saying, but boy, 3 years from now, look at programs that have been the blue bloods. Indiana, one that has not been and that is in there. So for every Indiana, there's somebody who used to be in that's not in the party anymore.
Yeah, there's probably two or three of them. Like, it's really easy to get left behind in this coaching search and then hire the wrong guy. And there should be like a 30 for 30 documentary on what has happened with Penn State, because first of all, it's never really been put, like, there's never been a leading candidate. There have been some names that have been thrown out there, but nothing that really had any smoke to the fire. And it's just bizarre. Like, that's one of the top 10, top 15 programs of all time. And you can't get
some. It was. But now we're in a different era. Cignetti, this is the Cignetti effect again. Not just him, whomever the what's the coach's name at Vanderbilt. These guys are winning at Indiana and Vanderbilt, baby.
Well, that was look at Jonathan Smith. That's why they got rid of Jonathan Smith. I mean, that was a prime example of
He stunk. He sucked. Yeah.
Everybody else is doing it. Why aren't we doing it at a place that has more resources? And I do think that Penn State and Kraft, I think they thought Cignetti was a slam dunk. I think they thought they would get him away from Indiana because they're Penn State. And
he had no, I don't know that he had any interest in going to Penn State.
No. I think that was all just,
I've said it before. I'm like, you know what? He's probably the opposite. He wants to stick it to you. He doesn't want to win. Yeah. He doesn't want to be the big boy. He wants to beat the big boy.
Well, look at what they did with Hartline. I mean, Hartline was in the, it was a name that was mentioned about being the guy at Penn State when all this was going on. And now he's at UCF and people at Penn State are up in arms. Like, how in the heck can you have Hartline be as mentioned as much as he's been mentioned in the media about being a prime candidate for Penn State with Urban Meyer's blessing? And you lose him to US, you know, South Florida, because you're tooling around with a guy from BYU. That one doesn't make any sense either. I mean, the guy's a good coach and everything, but he's not a Big Ten. He has no clue what the Big Ten's about in that respect. So they really put themselves, and I don't doubt for 1 minute that they will probably ultimately fall back on Terry Smith, because I don't think they can go find a G5 guy and bring him in now with everything that's happened around them. I just got this feeling that they're going to save face and elevate Terry Smith, because I think there's enough support by the football alumni to do that. But then you look at it like you said, and I think, Jim, you said as well, then why did you fire Franklin? If that was what you were going to do, why did you fire Franklin
when you did? This is what Indiana basketball did a long time ago when they fired Bob Knight. I don't have a problem with you firing somebody, but if you're going to take down the king, you better have a freaking plan.
Yeah.
You don't go in there willy-nilly and just say, okay, we're going to do this today and tear down a program with no freaking plan in the middle of rush hour traffic, which is in essence what they've done.
Well, you know what happened with Bob, the Chesney guy from James Madison, who went to UCF.
That's the name that I was going to bring up.
Yeah, Chesney.
That's the guy they missed out on. Now, and why he took that UCLA job, I'm like,
well, here's why.
Oh, dude.
Jimmy Sexton is his agent. He's also Franklin's agent.
Everybody else's agent.
Right. Well, he's also he was also Franklin's agent.
I need to get him as my agent.
He was pissed at Penn State that they fired Franklin. So he went out and was doing some things in the back room, and that's how he got out UCLA. And he got a great package out there.
Yeah, but that also screws college football up.
I know. Sexton does that. He's got too much power in the world.
It's not just them. There's so much crap that's going on right now. The biggest thing that they have to fix is this calendar. I'm so sick and tired of listening to people bitch and moan about Lane Kiffin. I'm like, Lane Kiffin didn't write the calendar, man.
Nope. Time out. All the coaches wanted this. So suck it up, Buttercup. They wanted the early calendar. Well, because kids start signing earlier. They wanted a longer playoff. They wanted all this stuff. So let's not bail them out of this. This is not what they wanted. Just that
there's not, it's goofy the way it's set up. Because this is the only sport, the NFL and pro, you don't have coaches leaving as the playoffs are starting, and you also don't have your best teams playing as the playoffs are starting. It's like we're having the Super Bowl and then working in reverse fashion here with the Big Ten Championship. These conference games, championship games, you're useless now.
I mean, totally I have useless. A hard time. I have a hard time. I got a lot of thoughts here.
I got a lot of problems with you people.
There's a thing called loyalty. Like, I don't feel bad that these coaches have to
loyalty.
Nope. Don't care. If you like, nobody feels bad for Lane Kiffin. Every word that's come out of his mouth has been a freaking lie.
If you
want to take the money, then that's fine. But don't piss and moan about the fact that you're not going to be able to coach your team. Ole Miss told him from the start, if you take the job, that's fine, but you're not coaching this team.
Like, a lot of stuff coming out about that, by the way. A lot of stuff coming out about that. Lane is not quite how he's laying that out. What you're saying right now, that the AD told him way and say, hey, this is how this is gonna go down. Now I'm sure in his mind he's thinking that yeah, but hopefully he'll change his mind, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. I probably would have been thinking that same thing too. And he said, and the AD did say he was considering that had they been, had they played in the SEC championship, yada, yada.
Here's the one thing I wanted to get to when we were talking about the coaching in general. Number one is, and this is no fault of his own, so people don't take this the way it's going to sound immediately, in the sense that Kurt Cignetti ruined college football. And what I mean by that is he recalibrated everybody's expectations to where people are now saying, if Indiana can do it,
why timelines. Can't?
Yes, if Indiana can do it, why aren't we doing it? That's why James Franklin got fired. I think that's why Jonathan Smith got fired. You look at Brian Kelly at LSU, like Sam Pittman, Arkansas. There were some coaches that were going to that were on the hot seat anyway. But I think it's what's the word? It has expedited the process in college football because everybody's saying, well, Indiana, if they're the worst program, you know, the lose at the time they were the losingest program in college football history, and now they're back-to-back college football playoff, have a chance to win a Big Ten title, have a chance to win a national title. What are we doing at LSU? What are we doing at Florida? What are we doing at Penn State? And so, like, I legitimately think, again, through no fault of his own.
Indiana's not doing this from some Joe Schmo conference where they're not playing. This is not right. Gonzaga in men's basketball.
Correct.
Right. Gonzaga in men's basketball, they play in the weak-ass conference where they play nobody. They go 20-2 every year and have never won a national championship. This is not that. This is crazy, but crazy fun.
Yeah, I mean, they're setting the tone. And so it's just, it's everybody's been scrambling and now you see it. And not that social media should be your gauge on how things are going, but anytime a coach loses one or two games, all of a sudden it's, well, look at what Cignetti's done. Why can't we do that? We have the resources and people forget like Kurt Cignetti is like Nick Saban. Not every coach is as good as it. Like Indiana found lightning in a bottle. There's just not going to be another. There are some other really good coaches out there. You're not going to have another Kurt Cignetti. It's not going to happen.
It is mind-boggling. He is an overnight success, and I say mm-hmm. that tongue in cheek. As long as he's been coaching, I still blows my mind that he has been coaching this long and does things this well with this staff and is just now finding this level of success and is doing it at Indiana of all damn places. Yeah. All of that stuff is just like, if this was a Hollywood movie, you'd have to have Quentin Tarantino make it to come up with some alternate outworldly ending because there's no way that this thing ends like it would normally end. But hey, man. It's here and it's now.
The other thing, too, at these other schools, there is so much meddling going on within the power structure of these institutions. Look at Florida. They hire Summerall. They tell him, I'm hiring the GM for the program, and we're hiring your defensive coordinator. He's the head coach. What has Cignetti said about why Indiana's good? He's talked about the continuity within his staff with guys being there for 7, 8, 9, 10 years. But you got all these people that think they know better, ADs included, about who should be the coordinators at this school or that school. And, you know, all of a sudden Summerall's going in and, you know, giving up everything just for the job. And then all of a sudden, 2 years from now, when he gets fired, he's going to look back and say, well, I should have never let this happen or that happen. The calendar thing is a simple fix. They got to move everything up. They could play either, you know, that week zero is like August the 23rd. Make that week one. I heard this from I think Texas Tech coach said this, and it made a lot of sense. You move everything up to the second week of August is when you start playing the games, and you would be done, including the national championship, on January the 2nd. And still have all your buys and all that stuff. And then the portal would open and everybody would be on the same plane. And then you could also negate to what a coach, you know, about hiring a coach and things like we're talking here. If they're in the playoffs or whatever, they can go at January 2nd when everything's said and done, because they're not going to be behind in anything. And they'll have to figure out what they do with this early signing period, which I think it's lost its luster, in my opinion. The early signing period, which the coaches wanted and fought for years and years to get, I don't think has helped them in the way they thought it was, because things have changed now. So you don't need an early signing period. You need to have everything that's in continuity and make that signing period as well as the portal period the same. So that way everything is on equally distributed amongst college football. There's no, you know, this or that. But by moving the schedule up a few weeks, then you solve problems and things of that nature. Now, there's going to be some schools out there that are not going to have the kids on campus because they're on the quarter system and they don't come till mid-September. Well, too bad. But you're not going to solve everybody's problems, but you can do it with the calendar. And I think that's what the coaches are trying to say. This is a simple fix. Like you said, Jim, this wasn't Lane Kiffin's fault. This was the college football's fault and the NCAA for letting it to occur the way it has occurred. And they've got to stand up and create a level playing field from A to Z, so this crap doesn't go on anymore than it has had gone on for the last, you know, couple of years now, because everybody's talking about the, you know, how bad it is, and there's nobody out there willing to fix it. And it has to take somebody, NCAA presidents, whatever, to say, this is what we're doing. And we, you know, tough shit, and go from there.
Absolutely. And lots of good games coming up, man. And that we don't know what they're going to be like. We don't know who's playing whom just yet. We'll find out on Sunday. When everything comes to fruition, the Heisman Trophy winner, we'll know who's going to win the Heisman.
What do you think? Where do you think Indiana would end up in this equation? Because I've been trying to say, they're saying the Orange Bowl. I've heard people talk about the Orange Bowl.
You cannot. In the beginning, I was pretty cocksure of things. Now I'm like, I can tell you one thing. I will guarantee you one thing.
Okay.
I can guarantee you where they won't play. The Sugar Bowl. Everything else is on the table.
Yeah.
Pasadena, if you win the Big Ten championship. If you lose, I think they ultimately end up in the Orange Bowl now, which I thought it was going to be the Cotton Bowl, but now I think it's going to be the Orange Bowl, because I think Texas Tech, which has slipped up into this top four, Texas Tech beats BYU. If they beat BYU for the Big 12 championship, they're going to be locked into that. They're already up there. So they'll end up getting a bye. And it doesn't matter if they're, well, yeah, I guess it does matter.
Mm.
Because what do you do with the SEC? If Georgia loses to Alabama, who there's no way, are you going to jump Alabama all the way up to, I guess, there's no requirement that they get a bye. So how far up does Alabama go if they beat Georgia?
Mm-hmm.
You could theoretically have five SEC teams in this thing and not have one in the bye with a bye. Mm-hmm. I mean, because you've got Oregon that has jumped up there.
Yeah, they've really jumped up.
So how does, are you going to, yeah, I don't know.
It's crazy.
Gonna be. So I can only guarantee you where they won't play. I think that I'm thinking more and more now, if they don't win Saturday, that they end up in Miami. And it could be Indiana and Notre Dame in Miami. How crazy is that, Dustin? Two teams that are hours apart in the same stinking state gets shipped down to Miami, but neither fan base will complain too much, I don't think.
Oh no.
It would be more fun than playing that game in 12 degree weather with the snow coming down.
Yes. No snow cone. Well, Tim says that you would go to the Orange Bowl if they lose. That's not correct. That's not set up that way. These are not
Do we have bold tie-ins for this now? What's I don't even know what's happening.
They try to recognize the traditional bowl alliances like the Rose Bowl and the Big Ten. That's why that's the only thing, like I say, if you win, probably going to go to the Rose Bowl. But they have their choice. It's about rankings.
Mm-hmm.
It's about rankings. So there's no guarantee other than the Sugar Bowl. The SEC, that will be an SEC team tie-in. They have the tie-in. But
you think that you think they're a lock for a first round bye?
Absolutely. Unless they get beat by four touchdowns.
Sure.
Especially because of what all is going on below them. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. So, I agree.
Hey, let's take a quick break. Can you stick around?
Yes.
All right. We've got more coming up. Coach Grip, Dustin Schutte with us. More on the other side. Welcome back. Right, Indiana Sports Beat Radio on this Thursday. Big Ten Championship Week. What a huge weekend in Indianapolis. It's going to be, you talk about Roll Tide. It's going to be a red tide in Indianapolis as Indiana basketball fans, Indiana football fans, Ohio State football fans, Louisville basketball fans all converge on Indianapolis. I had Gus Johnson on yesterday, and he was wearing he's got a brand that he's a part of, but it was basically red and white. And I'm like, dude, you need to save that for Saturday. I said, you could commit murder in the middle of downtown Indianapolis on Saturday in that outfit and never be seen and just walk away because Indianapolis is going to look like the North Pole on Saturday with all the little elves going around.
Yeah, perfect it will. Timing. I'm guessing that game on Saturday lost not the Big Ten championship. I'm guessing the basketball game lost a little luster after what happened last night.
I don't think so, because Louisville lost to Arkansas.
Okay, well, Arkansas is a little bit different than Minnesota.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah, but you know what? Nah, it's Louisville. It's Indiana, Louisville. It'll be a fun day.
The day alone is going to bring the energy.
I don't think that it matters. For one thing, you're not. I don't expect Indiana to win that game.
Right.
It's not a game that. So, you know, if you were looking at it from a fan's perspective, I would tell you, hey, man, you cannot go into that with great expectations. That's one that if you get that, it's a Christmas present. Take it, smile, go on with it, baby. You need to worry about that night.
I was going to say, I think that the football game is going to be much more enjoyable. I think that's going to be a great football game. And I'd like to get you guys' thoughts on this because I have not talked to anybody on the IU side about this. After watching Indiana, now this is seeing them live one time. The rest has been on television and Hulu and press boxes. I thought heading into the Big Ten championship game, watching them kind of throw the ball around, seemed like to me Indiana's going to benefit from that game being played in a dome.
I've thought about that.
Because the passing attack, at least on Saturday, was not great.
Fernando is an indoor guy.
Sure. And so I thought if that game is played in, you know, week 12 outside in Columbus or Bloomington, I'd have a little bit more concern. The fact that it's in a controlled climate and you're not going to have to deal with any weather, I think that's a huge benefit for Indiana. And that's not a knock. That was just something I noticed in that 56-3 drubbing in West Lafayette on Saturday. Friday.
And that would be correct. I mean, that we saw it is everything that you can take that can help you. Yes, Indiana is definitely a team that needs every small advantage they can get. And while it's going to be the same for both teams, it works out better for Indiana. It gets them back to being closer, I think, than the opposite way around. But I think that the conditions are going to be perfect. Because we're going to be inside, it's going to be 71 degrees, whatever the case, it's going to be fantastic. Kurt Cignetti, you know, they've been holding some things up their sleeve, not letting everything out, and you're not going to let it all out now, but you might pull it all out, man. I mean, it's if not now, when?
Yeah. I think that's no. I think that's a good point. Like, this is something that Indiana hasn't done since what, the 1940s? Won a Big Ten championship.
45.
So yeah, I mean, this is. I mean, there's no. I don't think he's going to hold anything back. And this is going to be, you know, this is basically what would you call it? Like, talent versus culture, almost. Because I think if you look at Ohio State's roster from top, and it's not to say Ohio State has a bad culture, but maybe talent versus development. Because if you look at Ohio State's roster top to bottom, it's loaded with 4- and 5-star caliber players. And not that Indiana's players aren't 4- and 5-star players, but they were not that coming out of high school, a majority of them, you know. And so I think that that's going to be an interesting aspect to this game. Can you coach your player? And we've seen it already. They went on the road and they beat Oregon. They went on the road and they beat Penn State. And I know Penn State was down, but that was probably the best football game this season Penn State has played. So, you know, we'll see. I'm really intrigued by that game. And I think it's going to be two people probably talk about a lot about the offense with Indiana and Ohio State. I'm interested to see these two defenses. These are two of the best defenses in the country.
Oh, they are the two. They are the two best defenses. In
are they ranked one and two?
Oh,
in a lot of categories.
Back and forth. Sure. Yeah.
Back and forth. It's crazy how close they are back and forth. And there was one. I was pulling up stats again the other day. I keep going through them, and it's dumb because it's like they're not going to get much closer. But one of my favorites, third down defensive conversion percentage. You're only going to 0.275 is the amount of times you're going to be successful on third down conversion against Ohio State. Oof. Indiana, 0.277.
Yeah.
Boy, they're really slacking. Just really slacking in that category.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And in areas where Indiana has given up more passing yards.
Yeah.
But Ohio State has given up more rushing yards.
Right.
So this is going to be fun.
Well, I think Ohio State giving up more rushing. And again, most of my season is covering Purdue, but look at how well Indiana's run the football. I mean, like, even when teams know they're going to run, they run it effectively. So I think that's a big benefit for Indiana in this game. Like, if they
should open up the passing game. And something that Ohio State does not do well, they don't take the ball away. They only have 7 interceptions on the year in comparison to Indiana's 16. Lewis Moore almost has as many interceptions on the season. All Big Ten safety Lewis Moore, I think, has almost as many as all of Ohio State.
Here's a question.
Let me put this in there for telling you how close these two offenses are, too. Third down conversion for each offense, 57%. Both teams are at 57% conversion rates on third down. That's amazing. Then you get to red zone scores. Red zone scores. IU is 92% with red zone scores. Ohio State is 90%. Indiana has gotten points 56 out of 61 times. Ohio State 56 out of 62 times. They've had almost the same amount of red zone chances as each other. That right there blows my mind, because you don't see that, you know, when you compare two teams, you rarely see that type of how close they are in certain categories. And that just tells you how good both offenses are as well.
Well, I was there for the one difference, because Julian Sayin threw a red zone interception against Purdue in a
why does the craziest things happen against teams against the crazy right? teams?
That was the conversation in the press box, was basically that CJ Nunnally had just stolen Julian Sayin's Heisman. Just a joke, of course, but I mean, it's going to be now. Here's one thing that, because you, Jim, you mentioned the turnover situation. I want to ask Coach Griff about this. I've had a theory in the past, and this is basically based on watching Tom Allen's defenses. Those defenses seem to tend to focus on takeaways and forcing turnovers. Mm-hmm. Is there, when I see teams that have high turnover rate, I feel like there's also, you are lacking in the tackling department. Like, it's almost like they're not trying to get guys to the ground. They're trying to punch the ball out. Is there some sort of association with focusing too much on turnovers, and then it surrender and it dipping in your ability to tackle.
No, because the way they teach it is one guy wraps and the second guy that comes in is looking to strip, and that's how they teach the concept. And you've heard the concept of you want to get as many hats to the ball as humanly possible. That's kind of where that comes from. So when you teach turnovers in the circuit, especially as a team unit, they teach one to wrap, one to strip. Now, it doesn't always happen that way because, like you said, you know, turnovers happen usually in one-on-one situations where a helmet hits the ball and it pops out or something of that nature. But I don't think there's any correlation between tackling success versus someone trying to, you know, spend a bunch of time worrying about takeaways. But Indiana has been phenomenal in that department this year. And right. It's been mostly interceptions. Well,
they lead the country in turnover margin.
Yep. And they also have gotten off those turnover margins 100-plus points on the year, which is another category that I look at because it tells you the success of Indiana taking a possession and doing something with it, because you look at it as, hey, they just gain an extra possession. Right. And they're getting points more times than not off of those takeaways. And that's huge.
Hey, man, this is going to be – but this sucks, though, because we're looking at this gigantic, gigantic game, and we're used to it because this is how it's always been done. But now with how college football has morphed in this college football playoff, turned more into a very, very similar to, say, the NFL minus divisions, which – college football got away from. Do they need to go back to divisions? Yes. Because there are 18 teams in the Big Ten, man. And fortunately, the Big Ten to me got really lucky this year in the fact that Indiana and Ohio State did not play.
Yep.
If they played, that probably screwed everything up because you had enough crossover where Ohio State's playing Michigan, I don't know who – I can't remember who else they played, but Indiana played Penn State. They played Oregon. So they had enough Iowa. They had enough mixture, but you're still not playing. So you guarantee at the end of the year that the two best teams are playing each other, because we're going to see it over and over. That's not the case. Look at the freaking ACC. Dude, yeah. 7-5. That's an embarrassment. They shouldn't – the ACC shouldn't even get a bid to the CFP this year out of embarrassment.
Well, if Virginia loses, they probably won't. So no, that's number one.
Right, they won't.
Unless
Miami slips in. How funny would that be?
That would be funny. Here's what I would say. I would just get rid of the – this is not going to happen. Get rid of the conference – there's no point to play the conference championship games.
Right.
If you finish in the – if you get to a point where it's a 16-team playoff, if you finish in the top – four, whatever they decide the auto bids are, the top four teams get in and just leave it at that. Nobody cares about the Big Ten championship anymore. I mean, Indiana and Ohio State both want to win that game this year. Don't get me wrong. But ultimately, if the loser – goes on to win the national championship, nobody from Ohio State last year is talking about their law not making the Big Ten championship game. They won a national title. Nobody cares. It's the same thing. Like it probably, I don't know how often it happens in college basketball, but how many times do you see a team that maybe doesn't win its league, finishes second or third in the league and is in the Final Four? I don't know that if it happens, I don't know.
Well, that's what the Big Ten has suggested. And even Cignetti did at the Big Ten conference game, media day. About what they call play-in games, where you take, you know, X amount of teams from maybe the Big Ten and you play the other teams from the SEC, and it's called a play-in game or whatever that, however that works out. And that would be actually the first week of that, of the.
But that won't be fair to the SEC.
Good point, Jim.
You don't need to say anything else. That's all you got to say. Yeah. But that's not fair to the SEC.
Yeah. I'm sure Greg Stanky's sitting there pounding his fist on the table because there's a probability that, you know, three lost team from the SEC is going to get in. And that's going to be the interesting dynamic. Either Texas or Alabama may get in because of three losses if they don't hold Alabama – in for getting to the championship game, and they don't count it. That's the dynamic that's going on here. That's in Indiana's favor. You can't just say, well, Alabama got to the SEC championship, and we're not going to hold that against them if they lose. You know, let's say they don't lose, and you know they lose, but they're still in the college playoffs. Well, that'd be like saying to Indiana, if you lose, you're out of the top four. See, that's the dynamic that you get into there, and I just think that's going to work in Indiana's favor because there's so many teams that are on that cusp of getting in. I mean, Notre Dame's worried. Notre Dame's worried because Miami has crept up real close to them in the final rankings, and neither one of them play, and it's theoretically possible that Miami jumps over Notre Dame because head to head, if you listen to what they said in Tuesday night's interview on ESPN, Miami's going to get a bump because of strength of record and strength of schedule is probably going to be in their favor over Notre Dame. So watch that dynamic.
This should be a new AP poll. Angelo Pons. That's who that is.
Mm-hmm.
Get it? AP poll? Get it?
Mm-hmm.
Come on, man. Oh, all right. Where were we before I so rudely interrupted?
We were talking about the dynamics of what's occurring and how the playoffs should be, and Big Ten, the conference championships go away. And I kind of like you. I think the commissioners of all these conferences really jumped the boat on going with these massive expansions. No. And they would never do that. And it was only done for one purpose. When they knew they were going to go to the playoff, having more teams and getting more teams in a conference hopefully opens the door for them to get more teams into the playoffs. And now what you've got is the regular season is a complete, you know what, because of no divisions. You can't play 18, you know, different teams. You're not going to play Ohio State every year. You're not going to play Michigan, you know, every year. And that's where the dynamic gets created. It's like Texas A&M. Everybody talks about Texas A&M and how great they are. Their record against SEC teams who they played against had a losing record by a great discrepancy. And they should have lost to South Carolina at home.
Right. Yep.
And they didn't get that much penalized for that. So it's crazy.
Someone posted on the Hoosier.com yesterday in the forums, speaking of which, you need to go there, get yourself a subscription so you can keep up with everything that's going on.
Recruiting and stuff was great, by the way. That's another reason to go.
Entered for free Adidas merchandise, by the way. But here's some great stats. Well, you know what? We need to take a break. Yeah. When we come back, we're going to talk about, I put up a post on X yesterday. Two teams. One was an 8-4 team. One was a 9-3 team. When we come back, I'll give you their resumes. Or actually, before we go away, I'll give you the resumes. And then when we come back, we'll talk more about them. The 8-4 team, they have four losses by a grand total of 15 points. All four losses were to teams that are currently ranked number 2, number 5, then number 9, and currently number 16. Team B is 9-3, has 7 conference wins against teams that are 12-44. They had a 3-game stretch in which they won 3 games by, I think, total of 10 points over teams that were 2-12 in the conference. Which one of those teams is better? Which I know it's hard to do when we're talking about it, but we'll talk more about that when we come back on the other side. Indiana Sports Beat Radio back with plenty more. Right after these messages.
Thank you. Thank you.
Welcome back. Welcome back. You got a police escort, Dustin Schutte, rolling into town. Coach,
I thought the police were pulling up on my house.
Snow still outside. And boy, is it so good that we're going to be playing this
inside
football game inside. Inside. Indianapolis will be rocking throughout the day. Indiana and Louisville playing a top 25 basketball matchup at 2 p.m. at Gainbridge Fieldhouse. And then 6 hours later, down the street just south at Lucas Oil Stadium, the Big Ten Championship between the only two undefeated teams in college football, in major college football, I should say.
Crazy.
And
what's everybody's dinner plans?
Well, I'm assuming you're buying St. Elmo's, right?
I had my shirt on today. I don't know which way I need to go. Well, I had my shirt on today.
Man, they're creamy cocktail sauce, I've got to tell you. Ooh, that's some good stuff.
It is. Mm-hmm.
You're not going to the game?
I will not be around this weekend, so I cannot buy you a steak. Well, brain check.
That's not right.
Daggone it. Yeah. They should just have it lined up out on the field. Winner gets to sit down, catered. St. Elmo should just cater it, right?
There you go. There you go.
Immediately, man.
I was going to ask if, Jim, you were participating in the Hermanaki wing eating contest with Joey Chestnut.
No, I was going to say, who the hell's Hermanaki?
That's the wings by the restaurant. Oh,
I figured it out. I didn't know.
They're delicious if you've never had them.
Is he in town Saturday?
Joey Chestnut?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, they're doing. I think it's part of the fan fest. I think.
Well, I'm sure, dude. I can't keep up with everything they got going on because I know it's going to be a ton. It's there's so much that's going to be happening.
You acting like you're going to work all weekend, Jim? Come on now.
Yeah, I know it's something. But yeah, it's going to be nuts. Where the hell are you going to eat?
Yeah,
That's a great question. You probably needed reservations about 3 weeks ago, at least.
You know that for a fact. Seriously. Yeah. But it's going to be a blast, but, man, is it going to be packed? Now, how crazy does it get if Indiana wins the Big Ten Championship?
Oh, that'll be crazy downtown.
We talking burning? Are we burning couches? Is this Morgantown?
If you can find a couch to burn, there you go.
Yeah, downtown Indianapolis, probably hard to find and it'll be so cold, it might not burn.
Yeah.
That's true. Yep. Good point.
David suggested we do a live show outside of the stadium as fans come in. Yeah, that's going to be a little chilly for me, Dave.
Yeah.
Good suggestion. But what we will do is we'll be over at Clayton's Country Bar in between basketball and football. Kind of a basketball postgame show, football pregame show, a little mix it in. A little something for the effort there, so
little country music.
Yeah, I think they got bands during the day, even dude. Indy is going to be rocking. The thing is, if you're going to both, that's a long day. And speaking of both, how about our man Don Fisher?
I know,
I think this is for the first time in his career. Wow. He will be able to do an Indiana football and basketball game in the same day. Never happened before. Well, hell, they've never played on the same day in the same city, to my knowledge.
That's crazy.
What a legendary day for an icon.
He's going to.
Yeah.
Yeah. You get some St. Elmo's horseradish sauce to warm the throat up, tickle the ivories. What? I'm going to have to take in some honey and some tea to give to Don before the game, take a picture with him of it or something. I need to remember to do that. I saw him confirm that he's doing that, and it's going to, all told, you've got multiple pregame shows and multiple post-game shows, which his post-game shows are like 15 minutes, granted, but still, boom, you add it up, you add it up. He's going to be going at it for, you know, 10, 12 hours.
Yeah.
All day long. And the difference is, people don't realize that when you're speaking in this manner, you're, you know, really trying to make sure that you, and not only that you enunciate, that you project your voice, and it strains your voice. Trust me, it's man, if it's not used to it. But even when you are, when you overdo it, Don's not used to doing 10 hours of broadcasting a day. I promise you, not many people are. So, but yeah, what an incredible deal that's going to be.
Yeah, that's going to be, I wish that he would, I know he's not, but it would be great if he was on social media, because I want some sort of time lapse as to how that goes. Cause he's going to have to get there at like 10 AM. This is the thing. If you're going to, well, if you're going, even if you're just going to the football game, you're going to have to get there super early just to find a parking spot.
I was, and you may still have to walk
3 miles.
I'm thinking I just go ahead and park at Lucas Oil, get it out of the way.
Yep.
Yep.
Because Gainbridge is the furthest back, not that far, 6 blocks, maybe 4 blocks, whatever, around the circle. Mm-hmm. But I'd rather do that. It's early, no crowd yet. Boom. And you then you just kind of keep go. You leave Gainbridge, go to Clayton's Country Bar afterwards, leave Clayton's, go to the Lucas Oil Stadium. Boom.
Yeah.
Bingo, bango.
Well, this is one thing I did find out. And again, I'm going to be there. You're going to be there. So we've got kind of that stuff taken care of. But you can reserve and pay for parking now via apps. Mm-hmm. So what I would encourage people to do is find out. There's a parking link on the Big Ten.org website where they link the parking apparatus that you can get into and see where there's available parking. Pay in advance, and then you're not worried about trying to find a parking spot. And that's going to be, like you said, that's going to be the craziest of it all, because how many people are just going to go, you know, they're going to park. I mean, I don't even know where you park for Cambridge at. You have, I mean, it's got to be around the area. I don't think they have a designated and so, parking area.
No, they don't. There's a lot of parking garages, and then there's like a parking lot that's just, I always park, I don't know what it would be, Pennsylvania, I guess. If you go further down Pennsylvania on the left-hand side across from the Arby's, there's a great parking lot. But the problem with that is it's a ticketed lot for football games, or at least for Colts games. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be the problem that some people run into, is like maybe they're used to parking certain places, but they may have, you know, for football, for Lucas Oil, with so many people in town, it may be ticketed. So that's going to be like, I just like, can you park in some of the hotel parking lots and pay? I don't know. No. I don't know how any of that works.
I mean, sold out, man. What are you talking about?
They're all sold out. Well, that's true.
Well, you know what? I don't know that that's true, because the hotels are all sold out.
Well, they're not all sold out.
Indiana is making up half the audience, number one. Number two, Louisville is the other part. They're driving up, driving back home, and Ohio State's going to drive over and drive back. So
yeah,
not a lot of stay over here.
When I got on one of my apps last night to see if there was any available closer to Lucas Oil, there was a couple. One was $1,200 for one night. The other two were $850 for one night.
Well, that's
and
cheap.
So it's a simple supply and demand type of thing going on there. And the Westin, I think, is the media hotel, is what I was told. But they don't have any availability. So it's crazy how many rooms are either occupied or reserved right now. It'll be interesting to see how many of those open up today with people canceling last minute and stuff. So
ticket prices.
Oh gosh.
Where are ticket prices right now? Anybody that's let's see, I guess I could.
Last I saw there was like $2,000. Which is crazy.
Big Ten championship.
Does Indiana get an allotment that they sell to their season ticket holders and stuff? Yes. Because
both schools.
Yep. I was like looking at that and thinking, my goodness, how can you, $2,000 for a ticket?
Well, that's the secondary market. Plus, you got to understand what does Lucas Oil hold? 70,000 people?
Yeah, I believe it's somewhere right around there.
And you're talking about one of these schools that is very accustomed to filling a 100,000 seat stadium.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So they have more season ticket holders than they have tickets
for this game. Right.
So that secondary market, that's that boy, oh boy.
Plus, they're close. You know, they're only 3.5 hours away at that. I mean, it may be only 2.5 nowadays, but that's a good part for travel for them.
And the additional aspect of this is, you know, how many times do you have a Big Ten game where it's, or a Big Ten championship where it's, you know, Michigan and Purdue or Michigan and Iowa, and nothing against those teams, but those teams were 8-4, 9-3. You've got the number one and number two. So you may have people that want to go just watch the number one and number two team that don't have any ties to this that are willing to spend some money. So there might be a national element to it as well. Like this has got to be the craziest Big Ten championship game you could have ever imagined. I will be interested to see how much money Saturday brings into Indianapolis. That's the number I'm really interested to see.
It's gonna be crazy.
Yeah, I know.
And I do think Indiana in the kicking game has great kickers that can hit it under pressure. That's the other thing, too.
We'll certainly see. They've got the guy, Radovich, getting also all Big Ten as well, man.
Oh, yeah. He is so good.
It's going to be a blast. It's going to be fun. Looking forward to it. Can't wait. What's up next for you, Dustin? You got 10 seconds.
Iowa State Purdue on Saturday.
Number one Purdue. How about the Big Ten? Number one, number two in football, number one and number what, three in basketball?
Three.
Yeah. Go Big Ten. Coach Griff.
I'll be breaking it down tonight. 7:30. Tailgate tonight. Come by. Get have on some it. Fun.
Get on it, man. We're back tomorrow to close out the week. Appreciate each and every one of you. Until tomorrow, I'm Jim Coyle. I will see you on the radio.
Thanks for listening to Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube page for more clips and team coverage of Indiana basketball, football, and more. You can also find full episodes and tons of other content on thehoosier.com. We'll see you next time for another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio.